All right, we're beginning here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph. Here the Gemara is quoting from the Mishnah, which is things that were done. 15th of Adar, which is Metakim et Adrachim, et Rechuvot, et Mikmot Omaim, Boseim, Kotzarchei Rabim. So all these things, these public works, are done with the money that comes from the Shkalim. Now here we're going to have a quote from a Breita that is, in a sense, completely irrelevant to what we want. And even within that Breita, there's more irrelevant information that's brought. The Gra eliminates the entire Breita because it's completely unnecessary to our Gemara. We'll read it because it's in here, but it really is not related to us at all, which is Eluhein Tzarchei Rabim. These are the things that are considered to be the necessities of the public. Now, what you would have thought is that the Breita is coming to tell us what's meant by Tzarchei Rabim in our Mishnah. But the truth is that this Breita doesn't do that for us because these are generic things that are Tzarchei Tzibur, and not necessarily related to the rainy season. We would say that these issues that are mentioned in our Mishnah, Tzarchei Rabim, are things that were postponed or held over until the rainy season completed because then they could take care of them. But the things that are mentioned here are things that go along all year round. The Breita is quoted from Moed Katan. It's a Breita that relates to what is permitted on Chol HaMoed. So we're going to eventually get to a Mishnah, which is the original Mishnah from Moed Katan, which tells you what Beit Din is allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. This Breita extends or gives you more information about what things Beit Din can do or allowed to be carried out on Chol HaMoed. So now, these are Elohim Tzarchei Rabim that are considered enough of a Tzarch Rabim that Beit Din could deal with them on Chol HaMoed. Danim Dinei Mimonot. They can adjudicate monetary cases, which require 3 judges. V'dinei Nefashot, capital cases, which require 23 or more. Dinei Makot, corporal punishment. Upodin. And they can redeem Erachin, V'charamim, V'gdeshot. So these are things that might require assessment. Arachin are set in the Torah. We know that. They're fixed numbers. So why would you need Beit Din to be involved? It's in a case where the person doesn't have sufficient funds to pay for it. So over there, then they have to assess what type of funds he has and how much he's chayav. So that's an issue of Beit Din. Charamim are things that a person made kodesh and now have to be redeemed. So now we need a Beit Din of 3 to check into it. Vekdeshot, and the same with Vekdeshot. We need a Beit Din to assess the value of them. We're going to sell them. If it's karka, we need 10 people to sell them. So we have a necessity for Beit Din in order to figure out what the real value of these items is. Umashkin et asota. They give a sota to drink if necessary. If the husband was mekanela, she requires drinking, and they do the procedures that are involved with the sota. Visorfin et hapara. They also burn the para. Now, burning the para is done on Har HaZeitim, but it has to be done in the presence of Beit Din. So they also have to be there. Forfim et egla arufa. Again, breaking the neck of the egla arufa is not done in Beit Din, but Beit Din has to be present there because they have to oversee the whole process, and they are part of the statements that are made there in terms of absolving themselves of guilt in this case. Rotzin Eved Ivri, and an Eved Ivri that was sold into slavery because of his debt and decides to stay on after his term. He wants to stay until the Yovel. Right? The question machloket about who can do that, which type of Eved Ivri can do that, but then they have to puncture his ear into the door in order for him to stay there through to the Yovel. That has to be done by Beit Din. Mutarin et Mitzora. And then a Mitzora who became Tahor, he has to go through a procedure of Tara, so they set that in motion, they get the Kohanim be involved and set in motion. Now the last piece of this Breita, so I said to you before, the whole Breita is not relevant here, but this last line of the Breita is certainly not relevant to our Gemara at all. It's really the start of the next section of the Breita. And it continues, the Breita continues after this, which we have just one piece of it, which is Mufarkim et Manal. Now Gabi'ai Imum is the Girsa that we have in the Gemara in Shabbat, which is, you're allowed to take the shoe off the form. So the cobbler, the shoemaker, after they made the shoe, they put it on a form to hold it in place to give shape to the shoe. So you're allowed to release that from the form on Chol HaMoed. Ve'in machzirin oto. You can't put it back on the form. Taking off the form is not then work of umanut, of craftsmanship, because you're simply releasing it. To put it on properly and to shape it on there, that's a work of craftsmanship, and that's not allowed. Then the Breita continues by a machbesh. We don't have this. But then it continues on about machbesh, which is the equivalent of a press. There it says you can't release or put into a press items that are done by a craftsman, but the household press, the one that you have at home, that you can use, you can put in and take out, because that's not considered to be a davar of umanut. None of that is relevant to us, because that's all about Chol HaMoed. It has nothing to do with Tzarchei Rabim at all. So again, the broader Breita here has nothing to do with us. But especially this line in the Braita, the latter half of the Braita, and continues on, have nothing to do with us, but it's clearly associated with Chol HaMoed, and not with Tzarchei Rabim. Now, this is what's relevant here. The Braita in Moed Katan is brought adjacent to this Mishnah. And then the Braita extends it and says these are other items that are allowed or permitted on Chol HaMoed. But this is what we're after, which is Taman Taninan. We over there, we were told, that Mashkin Beit HaShlachim, that what they're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed is Mashkin Beit HaShlachim. Beit HaShlachim are fields that require irrigation. Fields that do not get water naturally through the rain or through some sort of mayan. They're watered manually. In that case, they can be watered through Chol HaMoed, so there's no loss incurred. That's a Davar HaAvid. Mitzayanin Elak Varot. And they also make sure that the graves are marked. Now, this is the question. This is why this is brought down here, which is, Lo Kvar Tzinu Mi'adar. Wait a minute. Our Mishnah says that they did this already in Adar. Our Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the Perek, enumerated amongst the items that are done on the 15th of Adar is Mitzayinin et HaKvarot, that they mark the Kvarot. So if they mark the Kvarot already in Adar, why are they marking them again on Chol HaMoed, which is already after Adar, you're in Pesach? Why are they marking them again? So this is why this whole section about Chol HaMoed is brought down, is because it seems to be that it's repetitive. You're allowing you to do things that you already took care of. So Mar says, Tipater. Tipater means the solution. The answer is, Jirad Shetef Shel Geshamim V'Shetefo. What happened was, a large rainfall happened after Adar. Till Tainan of Adar, they had stormy weather, or they had heavy rains, and heavy rains washed away the markings that they had done in Adar. Because again, raining is expected through Adar, and rain is also expected through Nisan. The Mishnayot, the Tani, tell us that it's only problematic once Yetzan Nisan. Once Nisan is left and you see rain, then it's a klala. But through Nisan, still rain is expected, and especially late in Adar, rain was still expected. So here they had a large rainfall. That large rainfall undid what they had done in Adar. That's why in Chol HaMoed, now they're pressed to deal with it. So then, the next question is, V'yotzin afal kilayim. In that Mishnah, it also says on Chol HaMoed, they go out to take care of the kilayim. So lo kvar yatzu mi'adar. Didn't they already deal with this on Adar? So here is, Tipater shaita shana afela. It was a late year, a late blooming year. Reina tzmachim nikarim. And therefore, the growth never reached the point where it was visible or easily recognizable that they could deal with the kilayim. They had to wait till much later to deal with the kilayim. They didn't postpone it, they just couldn't deal with it up front because of the lateness of the year. That's the way the Yerushalmi deals with it. In the Bavli and Moed Katan and Davov, the Gemara there brings additional answers. One is, Habe Bachir, Habe Afil. So as opposed to our Gemara, which says it's about the season was late, and therefore things weren't recognizable. The way the Bavli deals with it says is that there's different types of growth. Certain things grow early, and certain things grow late. So the ones in Adar were the early growers, they dealt with it. But the things that grow later in the season, they couldn't deal with until Chol HaMoed. So the Bavli differentiates in the tzmachim themselves, in the growths themselves, whereas the Yerushalmi is differentiating in the season itself. It was a late season, a late blooming season. The other way the Bavli deals with it is HaBzraim HaBirakot. One's dealing with Zraim, which would be items like vua, grains, and so on and so forth. And the other things are Yerakot, the vegetables, which come in later. It's the same answer, but just giving definition to what's early and what's late. The Zraim are early, and the Yerakot are late. And therefore, there's that differentiation. That's the way the Bavli deals with it. In addition to that, on Chol HaMoed, the Mishnah mentions, and over here, we don't have it, which is the fact that they used to be mitakenet drachim. So they're allowed to be mitakenet drachim on Chol HaMoed. Our Mishnah also says they were mitakenet drachim. So why are they being mitakenet drachim again on Chol HaMoed? So that's not brought up by the Gemara. The Rishonim asked that question, and they answered a number of ways. One is, it could be answered the same way that we answered the problem with Siyun Kvarot, was that they had a huge rainfall. Afterwards, that caused problems with the roads, so they had to fix the roads again because of the rainfall. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the fixing in Adar was for the Olei Regalim was coming up to the Regal. The return trip, they hadn't dealt with yet, and that they have to deal with on Chol HaMoed. If things got ruined or because of the late season, whatever it was, they have to deal with people going back home. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that they didn't finish. They were working on it, and they didn't finish it. They're allowed to finish it through Chol HaMoed. So there are other ways the Rishonim deal with answering that question. The Gemara there asks a very simple question is, why are we allowed to do this? Why is Beit Din allowed to be dealing with these issues at this time? Okay, they're necessities, but deal with them beforehand. Why do we give them permission? Deal with them afterwards. The Gemara there says something very interesting. It says that, Mishum Schar Pi'ula Demozli Gaban. The workers don't have work because it's Chol HaMoed. Nobody hires workers on Chol HaMoed. So for the Beit Din to hire workers is extremely cheap because they have no other work. Since they have no other work, for Beit Din it's much cheaper to hire the workers now, and it's huge savings to the public for them to hire them to work during Chol HaMoed. Based on that, we allow them to hire these individuals to work then because it saves the tzibur significant funds in order to deal with these issues. Now obviously these are pressing issues. These aren't just stam issues. These are issues that need to be dealt with, are important. Tumah is important with regards to the Olei Regalim. The roads are important to Olei Regalim. The one question you can have is about Kilayim. Kilayim, okay, it's important, but is it necessary to do during Chol HaMoed? And that's where the Bavli is answering, well, it's not necessarily necessary, but it happens to be that we are beneficiary of the fact that it's Chol HaMoed, and therefore Beit Din can get away with paying a lot less to get this taken care of, and therefore they deal with it on Chol HaMoed. Right now, the Gemara moves on to another piece, which is the issue of minayin litziyun. How do you know that you have to have tziyun, you have to mark the graves? Here the Gemara went through our Mishnah, and the question from our Mishnah to the Mishnah in Moed Katan, which is, our Mishnah said a number of things, was tikkun derachim, tziyun kvarot, and the kilayim. So why are they both in the Moed Katan in here? And that's what the Gemara dealt with. Then, the Gemara takes a step back now and says, how do you know you have to mark graves at all? This is found in the Bavli as well. The Bavli in Baba Batra deals with this. Rabbi Brechia is a fourth generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Bat Yaakov, who is a third generation Amorah in Eretz Yisrael. B'shem means it's always the end of a list. In the Yerushalmi, that's a key word that you should know. In the Bavli, we go Amar, Amar, Amar. Over here, the Yerushalmi, as we mentioned before, doesn't do that. It says Rabbi Brechia, Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov. It just lists their names without any transition word. That means that they said in the name. When you get to B'shem, it means the last person in the line. So now it's B'shem, Rabbi Chonya, Divrat Chavrin. So this is a first generation Amora and Eretz Yisrael that they're quoting for him, who came from Divrat Chavrin. That's where he comes from. So that's the first statement. Now we have a comma. In the Bavli, this would be the equivalent of Ikeda Amre, or Ve'iba Iteima. So here, again, in the Yerushalmi, you don't have that. It just goes on. But because we know we saw B'shem, that means it was the end of the list of these names. And now here's an alternative of who said it. Here's the alternative quote, which is Rabbi Yosei Amri Lo. Rabbi Yosei, who's a fourth generation Amora, said it this way, which is Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha. Yaakov Bar Acha is a third, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. B'shem Rav Chonya Divrat Chavrin. So it's the same quote from the original source. Is again the first generation Amora of Chonya. So he quoted in his name. So you know again that B'shem, it's the end of the list. And then we have again another attempt at it, which is Rav Chizkia Omer. So now Rav Chizkia gives the shoshelet of how this came to us in a different way. So Rav Chizkia is a fourth generation Amora, says it this way. It could be that Rabbi Chizkia is singing in the name of Rabbi Uziel, of Rabbi Uziel prayed to Rabbi Chonya, the Divrat Chavrin, that's probably not Shemi Beit, but Divrat Chavrin. So that's possible of how the quote is, or it's similar to the previous statement, which is Rabbi Yosei, who now said that this is right, Amrei La, which you could say, because it's Amrei La, that it's Rabbi Uziel Brei, to Rabbi Chonya, the Beit Chavrin. So it's Rabbi Uziel, the son of Rabbi Chonya, it's gotta be Rabbi, again, because we're talking about an Amora from Eretz Yisrael, Divrat Chavrin, B'shem, Rabbi Chonya, the Beit Chavrin. So it's coming through his son, this way, at least in this Shoshalet, it's coming through his son. So you have a first generation Amora, son who's a second, third generation Amora, and then you have a fourth generation Amora. So in all of these cases, you have a fourth generation Amora quoting it from an Amora before him in the name of the first generation Amora of Chonya. But you have three different versions of the quote. It all starts from this Rabbi Chonya, which is Tamei, Tamei Ikra. Now, Tamei, Tamei Ikra is the pasuk that's found by the Mitzora. The Mitzora has to call out. When he is in a state of Tumah, he has to warn people not to approach him because he is Tamei. So he has to give that warning. Kedei Shitei Atumah Korei Lecha Befia. What does it mean, Tamei Tamei Ikra? It's as if the Tumah has to call out to you. As if it has a voice to speak. V'omer lecha and says to you, prosh, separate. So that's what it means, Tamei Tamei Ikra. And really, the way that you could read it is, Tamei, Tamei Ikra. That which is Tamei, Tamei Ikra will call out Tamei. So instead of saying it's the Mitzora that's calling out, but rather it's the Tumah that's calling out. So how does Tumah, it's an inanimate object, so how does it call out? Tziyun Kvarot. If you mark the kever, then it makes it clear that it's calling out and saying, don't come here because there's Tumah. So that's the first source that we have. Rabbi Eli, which is a third generation of Maor B'Shem, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman we saw yesterday is Dav, second generation of Maura. It comes from here. It comes from the Pasuk from Yechezkel, which is, V'avru ha'ovrim ba'aretz, v'ra etzem adam. People will pass through the land and they'll see a bone of a person. Bana etzlo tziyun. And they'll build next to it a monument or some sort of marking. Now the Gemara Darshans hear the words in the Pasuk, which is etzem. Mikan shemitzaynin al atzamot. It teaches us that you make markings for atzamot. Atzamot doesn't just mean a kever, but atzamot means bones. Anything that is mitameh ba'ohel requires a tziyun. So if you have a rova kav, if you have a rova kav worth of atzamot, then you have a din of tumat ohel, you have to make a tziyun. Or you have rov binyan and rov minyan also. That also gives you tumat atzamot, you have to put up a tziyun. So that's the way you learn from the word etzem. Anything that is sufficient to get you tumat ol, even though it's not the whole body, as long as it's the required or requisite amount to get you tumat ol of atzamot, you have to put up a tziyun. That's number one. Adam. What does Adam teach you? From here you learn that you mark the spine and the skull. Again, these are two items of a body or a corpse that are metameh be'ohel, because they are significant. The shidra and the gulgolet, the spine and the head are significant parts of the corpse, and therefore, even without basar, just the bones themselves create a problem of tumat ohel, and you have to mark them. Ubana, mikan, shimitzaynin, agabei evin kvua. Ubana comes from a building. You must mark it over a stone or a rock that is permanent, that's affixed or locked in place, embedded in place. Because im omer at, because if you say, agav evin tlusha, that you do it on something that moves, afi olechet umetamei b'makom echer. It's going to end up moving, and then we metamei b'makom echer. Now, it's not metamei b'makom echer, because the evin is not tamei, but it's metamei b'makom echer, which is that this rock that has the marking on it is going to be in another location, and people are going to go over there, and if they pass over it, they're going to think they are tamei. So now you're going to have it's a double problem. The one problem is that where the rock is now, people are going to think they're tamei. And where the real tumai is, they're not going to know, go over there and not think they're tamei. So because of that, you have to use something that's lodged in place, that is well-founded, because that way it stays in place, and therefore it marks the grave. If you don't do that, you're going to run yourself into problems. It's low. So it says there that you have to build a tzion, but not it's low tzion. What does it mean, it's low next to it? Le makom ta'ara. So that teaches you, not only do you have to mark the actual tumah, you have to mark a little bit of the area around it. Because otherwise what's going to happen is the person's going to be going along, and then they bump into your marking. But once they bumped into your marking, they're ready to make, because they hit the tumah right away. So you have to give them a little buffer. That's what the itzlo means. You have to give them a border or something around it that gives them warning that they hit it, but not hit the tumah yet. Tziyun. Mikan the tziyun. This is the source for tziyun, which is that you have to put a marking, you have to build some sort of monument on it. Now, the Gemara moves on and discusses, it shouldn't be above here, but rather just start of a statement, which is, Matza even achat mitzuyenet. If he finds one stone that is marked, Afopi she'ein mikamin kein hama'il alea tamei, ani omer, mate, the Girsu Shvi, ha'kam tzutz, aya natun tachtea. So now, if you have an even achat, single stone that is marked, Afopi she'ein mikamin kein, even though this is not normal, it's a very small size stone. So if you look at this and you say, this is no way that this is covering over a body that is underneath it, because it's not the size of a body. Since it's not the size of a body, you assume that it's not tumat ohel because it's covering too small an area. Gemara says, nevertheless, hamayli leha tamei. Nevertheless, you're tamei if you are mailin it, because ani omer, I'm going to explain it, mate. Here it says meita mitzuyan. Of course it's a meita mitzuyan, but rather the girsa in the source is ha'kam tzutz, which is that it's a mate that was folded over or crushed. The term is used when the head and the feet are together, folded over. So he got crushed under a avalanche or something like that. Something happened to the body that made the body collapse in a way that it's not stretched out. Pashut would be a body that is stretched out. This is a body that's folded over. And because of that, the tziyun is smaller than you would have thought. And that's why you have to worry about it. Hayushtayim. If you have two rocks that are marked, hama'il alehem tahor. If you walk over them, then you're tahor. Ubenehem tamei. Between them is tamei. The assumption is that if you have two stones, and there's sid on them and between them, that they're trying to demarcate the area between them and not themselves. Imaya charush ben taim, if it was plowed in between the stones or the rocks, harihen ki yichidot, then they are like individual stones, because nobody would plow in between the stones knowing that there is tumah over there, or there's a grave in there. So benehem tahor, now between them is tahor, visvivotehem tameh, and around them is tameh, around them. There's one gear says alehem tameh, the other gear says svivotehem, based on what we saw before, which is that not only do you mark the rock itself, you mark around the rock. Therefore, svivotehem is tameh. Tani, ein mitzaynin ala basar. You do not mark flesh. Even though kzayit basar min amet is mitameh ba'ohel, you do not mark flesh. Shema nitakel habasar. Right here, nitakel with an ayin, could be it's nitakel with an aleph, would have been equally good. But that we know that over time, basar decomposes. So because it decomposes, don't want to mark it because of the long range implications of this, which is what we're going to say now. Rabbi Yusta Bar Shunem. Now, rather than being Bar Shunem, meaning the son of Shunem, Bar Shunem here means like from the son of, but son of means from that location. So it's Rabbi Yosto from Shunem. He was the son of the city of Shunem, rather than an individual named Shunem. By Kumi, Rabbi Mano. He asked Rabbi Mano. We're talking about here fifth generation Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael. Velo nimtza mitamei tarot limafreya. Isn't he going to cause a problem of being mitamei tarot limafreya retroactively? Don't you have a problem here if they don't mark it? Is that people are going to cross over there. Now all of a sudden you have a problem. This person with tarot crossed over there and now he's tamei. Because there is tumat tamei here. If you don't mark it, we're going to have a problem. We know there's a Kzai Basar mate there now, so he's Tamei now. Because after, so he'll only find out afterwards. He won't be warned ahead of time. So he'll cross over there, and then retroactively he'll figure out that he's now Tamei. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Manos is back to him, Mutav Shidkalka Bolo L'Sha'ah V'Al Yitzkalkulu Bo L'Olam. It says that that's a temporary problem. If you mark it, you create a permanent problem. Which is if you mark it, they're going to continue to mark it forever. And if they continue to mark it ever, there's no tumah there. And people are going to be mitamei tarot, and they're going to burn tarot when it wasn't right. And that has long-range implications. So we're better to have a small problem in the current situation, in the present, than to create a long-term problem by marking it. So he says, we're willing to take the risk of not marking it in order not to have the long-range problem marking it and then it not being there in the long run. So that's his answer. You're right. In the short term, we do have a problem. In the long term, we won't have a problem and we prefer taking the long-range view rather than the short-term view. Okay, next Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Birishona hayu okrim umashlichim lifnehem. In the beginning, when they sent out the Shlichei Beit Din on the 15th to check out the kilayim in people's fields, if they did not clear it out, the Shluchei Beit Din would rip out the kilayim and leave it there. Mishrabu ovrei avera, when there were too many people in violation, hayu mashlechim ledrachim, then they used to rip it out and throw it out into the public thoroughfares. Hitkinu sheyu mafkirim, and then there's a further takana, which is that mafkirim and kol hasadeh, that they made it free for all on the sadeh, they used to disown them of their fields. Now here there's clearly a process going on here, which are their stages in the Mishnah. The Gemara will discuss what exactly those stages are. Which is Tani, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Birishona, Hayu Okrim, Mashlichim Lifnehem. In the beginning, they used to take them out and throw them in front of them. Vayusmechim, Shtei Smachot. The owners were excited about this. Wow, look at this. The Shlichei Beit Din come around, they ripped this stuff out for us. Number one, Achad, Hayu Menakashim Tzdotehen. That they were weeding their fields. Hey, why should we do it? They're going to take care of it for us. Number two, Vechat, Shiyu Ne'enim Min. Our gear seer is Kilayim, which is unlikely, but Mina Gazel. They were benefiting from the Gazel. Now, why is it Gazel? Because they were not paying the workers. They're having people come and work in their fields, beneficiaries of what's being thrown out there, and now they're benefiting from that, either because they didn't pay the workers, or they were giving the weeds as feed to their animals. So they were beneficiaries of someone else's work, so they were stealing. Kilayim is the problem because Kilayim is not Asur B'Hana'ah. Kilayim is only Asur B'Hana'ah when we're talking about Kilei HaKerem. Kilei Zraim is not Asur B'Hana'ah, and that's what we're speaking about here, is Kilei Zraim. Kilei HaKerem is not necessarily relevant then because it's not the season for Kerem. So that would be unlikely that it's Kilei HaKerem. Could be. And then you could answer that they were benefiting from Kilayim is that there's an Isur Hana'ah. But it's more likely that we're talking about Kilei Zraim, which doesn't have an Isur Hana'ah. And therefore the right girsa over here is Sheyu Nenim Min HaGazel, that they were benefiting from theft. Theft in the sense that they're beneficiaries of someone else's work, or somebody else is doing it for them, and now they're using it. They're giving it to the animals. They're having their fields weeded by people they're not paying. Now, the next stage. Mishrabu Ovrei Avera. So then once there were many people doing this, so not only were they enjoying the benefits of the Beit Din coming around and doing this, but in Greece, people saw the benefits of this and they continued to do this. Too many people with kilayim, hayumash lechim ala drachim. They would throw it onto the road so they would not have the benefit of the weeds that you pulled out or the kilayim that you pulled out. They wouldn't get the benefit of that. They were still happy. One of the simachot was still there, which is shayum nakashim is still there. Again, they were weeding the field. Okay, they didn't get to keep what they pulled out, but they're still weeding the fields for them, and they were beneficiaries of that, right? Saving on having to rip it out. Hitkinu, shihu mafkirin. We have an most likely, shihu mafkirin sadudehen, that they were mafkirin their fields. So Beit Din instituted that there would be punitive. It would be punitive now, not simply that they're going to take care of it, but punitive in the sense that they'd lose their fields because they weren't taking care of the kilayim. So now the Gemara is going to move on to a question, which is this suggestion of how to explain the Mishnah, based on the writer that we brought over here, says that Beit Din is empowered to be mafkir people's property. So the Gemara's question is, minayin shehefker Beit Din hefker. How do you know that Beit Din is empowered to disown people from their property? Dichtiv. So here we have a pasuk that's found in Ezra. Pasuk in Ezra says, "V'chol asher lo yavo l'shloshet hayamim ke'atzat asarim v'azkenim." Anybody who does not come in the next 3 days, based on the advice of the sarim, the ministers, and the zkenim, the elders, yacharam porechusho. All of his possessions will be put into chirim. V'hu yibadel mikal agola. He'll be separated out from the kal agola, and his property will be released, disowned. So Ezra basically tells them that either you show up here to go up there to Israel to make Aliyah to Israel when they got permission to do this. If you don't show up, you're going to be disowned of your property. Well, how does he disown them of their property? Must be that he disowned them of their property because Beit Din is empowered to do such a thing. Minayin shihib tura min amasrot. Now, if Beit Din is mafkirit, we know that when it comes to hefker, hefker is patur min amasrot. Because maser, you only chayav in maser when the other parties that are there don't have a share in it. Torah says that you have to give the masrot to these individuals. Well, if those individuals have shared ownership in it with you, then you don't have to give it to them. In the case of hefker, you are equal, quote-unquote, owners in this because they have equal rights to it like you do. Whoever gets it first gets it, but they have a right to get to it. And therefore, you're patur min masrot. Rabbi Yonatan Brei, the Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Acha. We don't have any timing on who he is because this is his cameo appearance. This is a cameo appearance. We don't see him ever again. So we don't have any sense of how to demarcate where he was in terms of the Amoraim because he's not speaking to anybody. He's brought in an independent statement and he doesn't appear again. So we don't have a sense of when he lived. But here's his one moment in the sun, which is Rabbi Yonatan Brei, the Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Acha. Shamala min hada. We learn it out from here. Ein ma'abrim et hashana. You're not allowed to make a leap year. Lo b'shvi'it, v'lo b'motzei shvi'it. You're not allowed to make a leap year during the Shemitah year, and not on the year after the Shemitah year. So you have 2 years in a row when you can't make a leap year. Seventh and eighth years of the cycle. V'im ibrua, but if Beit Din does go ahead and makes it a leap year, harizu mi'uberet. That is mubar. I mean, they're not supposed to, but if they do it, it is Mi'uberet. Now, if you're in the Shemitah year, what is the status of all the vegetation in the Shemitah year? It is Hefker. So you see here, V'chodesh echad shu mosif, lo patur mi masrotu? That extra month that they add in, isn't it patur mi masrot? So here, Beit Din has the power to add on a month to the year. They're not supposed to. But if they do, it works. And it works, it makes it patur mi masrot. I mean, that month now has a din of Shemitah. Because as a din of Shemitah, it's patur mina masrot. Where it says, okay, ad kedon shvi'it. That explains shvi'it because it's self-evident why on shvi'it we wouldn't want you to make it into a leap year. Because who would want to extend Shemitah? Shemitah where they can't eat and they can't plant, that's a huge burden on the people to make it into a leap year during the Shemitah year. But it's motzei shvi'it. Why can't they make a leap year in motzei shvi'it? What's the problem with making a leap year in motzei shvi'it? Now, mai is an addition of the Bavli. The Yerushalmi wouldn't have the word mai. Because Mai is a key word or a transition word that says to you, what's the halacha? So that was definitely added in later. In the Yushami, it would read, Ad Kedon Shvi'it, Motzei Shvi'it, and they would know that it's a question based on your intonation. Now, obviously when it's written, it's hard to know the intonation, but that's the question, is Motzei Shvi'it. Mai is a much later addition, and it shouldn't be there. Amar Rabbi Bon, Shalom, Barabot b'isur chadash is not to increase the amount of chadash. Because what you have here is a trap, in a sense. During the Shemitah year, they couldn't plant anything. So that means that they have no harvest from the Shemitah year. Going into the eighth year, they have nothing left over from the seventh year. Everything that was planted in the eighth year and harvested is chadash, has to wait for the time of the Omer in order to be mutar. So if you create a leap year, then you extend an extra month where they have chadash and they can't eat from the new grains. So you're basically extending Shemitah in that sense, because the new grains aren't edible yet because they're chadash, and you're still stuck from what the Shemitah, you didn't have any harvest from there. So it's really the same problem, but the same problem just has a tail to it, which is that tail lasts until the Havata Omer. And that's why they don't want a leap year. Rabbi Zeura is probably the right pronunciation over here, and that's the equivalent of Rabbi Zeira in the Bavli. B'shem, and we have here Rabbi Lazar, but it probably should have been Rabbi Abao is the proper Girsa, named Rabbi Abao. So you have a third generation Amora quoting a second generation Amora. Hada da'at amar, that which you said, ad shlo hitir Rabbi Lavik Yerek Michutz la'aretz. That which you said is only true before Rabbi allowed people to bring in Yuvul from Chutz La'aretz, to bring in, to import during the Shemitah year. Aval Mishitir, Rabbi Levi Yerek Michutz La'aretz. Once Rabbi allowed them to bring in, import food, vegetables from Chutz La'aretz, he Shvi'it, he Shar Shnei Shavua. It's Shvi'it, it's the same as any other year. Shavua means the 7-year cycle. So Shvi'it is no different than any other year in the cycle, and they can make a leap year during the Shemitah cycle, which is exactly what happened to us last Shemitah. And we're coming up next year as a Shemitah year, but 7 years ago when it was a Shemitah year, it was also a leap year. It happened to be a leap year during the Shemitah year, which is not permitted based on the Gemara, but here we see in the Yushalmi, depends when. It's not only not allowed when the din is a Shemitah de'oraita, it seems like. When Shemitah is de'oraita, then it's a problem, which we're going to see in a second. The Gemara is going to explain that. When Shemitah is de'oraita, then it's a problem. Now, this is Zera. Originally, they did not allow them to bring in vegetation from Chutz La'aretz because they were afraid of the dirt or the mud coming in with them, and that has tumat chutz la'aretz, so they didn't want them to bring it in. In addition, the Yerushalmi in Shvi'it discusses the issue of if you bring in peirot from chutz la'aretz, it would look like these individuals are being socharei peirot shvi'it. They're transacting within peirot shvi'it, which is asur, because they're transacting with peirot, but it's not completely identifiable, but they're from chutz la'aretz. Now, that might be different between those cities or villages that are on the Sapar that are out on the border versus things that are internal. And that might contribute to why there are stages within this Gezerah.
Then there were stages in the Heter. The original Heter was that the Kfarim that were on the periphery or on the borders, they had huge interactions with Chutz La'aretz, meaning that they had trade with the people that were adjacent to them. So then when they put in the Gezerah, they couldn't bring in port food. It was a Gezerah she'en etzivur yechol amod bo. And the Kfarim of the Safar, those that were on the borders, they continued to eat, and they were matir that. They allowed them to use it. Later on, they more broadly opened up this heter to say that everybody can utilize, not only the people that are on the border who interact normally with them, but even everybody can use this imported food. Now, the Gemara here assigns that change to Rabbi, that Rabbi was one who instituted it. And again, the Rabbi in the Bavli, in the Gemara in Gittin, is associated with the Deyo that Shemitah Bezman Hazeh is only Dirabanan. So there's obviously some correlations we're going to see in a second between the two. But he was matirit, and they let go of this issue of possibly bringing in Tumat Chutz La'aretz because it was too hard. They needed help on Shemitah, they needed food. But once they've done that, you now lose the issue of extending Shemitah or extending Chadash in the following year because you already have imports from Chutz La'aretz. And since you have imports from Chutz La'aretz, you have food. You have what to deal with. And therefore, it's not as much of a burden. Look, it's still problematic. It's not easy. But we're not going to be as makpid not to make a leap year during the Shemitah or the post-Shemitah year. All right, so Amar Rabbi Mana. So now Rabbi Mana comes. Again, here's a later Amora that is speaking here, a fifth generation Amora. Hadadat Amar b'rishana shayu shanim kitikunan. That's what you said was true when the shanim were in order. Al-Khashab she'en shanim kitikunan. So now that the years are not in order, hishvi'it. Shvi'it is no different than any other year. So this is what I've been telling you all along, is when the years were in process means that it was din d'oraita. When Shemitah was a din d'oraita, then we didn't make leap years during the Shemitah, then we didn't make leap years in the post-Shemitah year because you were under a lot of duress because Shemitah d'oraita. There's less room to be matir when you're dealing with Shemitah d'oraita. When you're dealing with Shemitah d'rabanan, then we have a lot more room to maneuver. And here, the Gemara seems to suggest that they would have allowed them to go out and plant if it was really necessary. Shemitah d'Rabbanan, they could have given them dispensation to plant. They do later on, they give them dispensation to plant to pay the taxes. They allow them to work in Shemitah because the government was going to come and collect the taxes anyway. They let them plant so that they could actually pay out the taxes because it's only Shemitah d'Rabbanan. So we have much more latitude when it comes to Shemitah d'Rabbanan, and therefore we're willing to make it a leap year because we have more room to maneuver when it's Shemitah d'Rabbanan. Shemitah d'Rabbanan because there's no longer a Yovel, and there's no longer a Yovel because you don't have Rov Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. Because the Yovel is lost, then you also lose out on Shemitah d'Oraita. That's a good question. In terms of the count, there are many deot on what the count was. One of the more amazing things is, about the Shemitah year, is that everybody in Eretz Yisrael is on the same Shemitah cycle. The Rambam himself disagrees with the Shemitah cycle that we're on, but he writes in the Mishnah Torah, even though I have a Mesorah, he says, I'm going to defer to the Mesorah of the Gonim, and it's amazing that the Rambam does that, because by doing that, he kept it consistent, he kept it that everybody was on the same Shemitah cycle. So even though there are differences in opinions, it's amazing today is that everybody is following the same Shemitah cycle. Alright, now, Tani, Shabbat Rabban Gamliel, Ivruah b'motzei shvit miyad. So Beit Rabbi Gamliel, who is the generation after Rabbi, the son of Yehuda Nasi, he made it into an Hebrew year b'motzei shvit miyad. Right away, he made it into it. So it means that in a post-Shemitah year, he made an Hebrew year. So here you have evidence of the fact that once we're at this point in time where the zerot of the non-importing went away and you don't have Shemitah de'oraita, that already then they were making the post-Shemitah year into a leap year without a problem. Now, in terms of this, one of the things that does come out of this Gemara is that the problem of Chadash exists in Chutzlaritz. It's one of the things that's evidence that there is Chadash in Chutzlaritz because Gemara says here you can't make it a leap year in this eighth year because of Chadash. Now, if there was no Chadash in Chutzlaritz, then you could have imported from Chutzlaritz and you wouldn't have a problem of Chadash. This is evidence of the fact that Chadash applies not only in Eretz Yisrael, but also outside of Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rabbi Abun, in min hada leit at shmamina. Says, from your position over here, or the proof that you brought, I can't come to any conclusion. Klum shamur et chodesh avid. Isn't the whole reason that Beit Din is empowered to make a leap year is because you have to make sure that it's chodesh aviv. Shumreyu. Shiavo b'chidusho. Make sure that it comes b'chidusho. Chidusho is in its newness. Newness means in the full moon, when the month is mechudash. Mechudash not means the new month, but the month in its fullness, which is the peak of the month, and that's the middle. You have to ensure that the 15th of Nisan comes in the Aviv, comes in the springtime. That's why Beit Din's empowered, meaning that the reason that over here the leap year works and everything is considered to be hefker and the Shemitah continues, it's not because Hefker Beit Din Hefker. That's not why it's working over here. The reason it's working over here is because Beit Din's empowered to make a leap year. And the result of making a leap year is the Shemitah. And so Shemitah makes it Hefker. There are two separate issues. One issue is that Beit Din's empowered to make a leap year. The second issue is once you made a leap year, the Shemitah is longer and therefore there's Hefker because of Shemitah. But it's not because Beit Din has the right to make something Hefker. Beit Din's empowered to make a leap year. And there are no limitations on that. The Torah doesn't say, don't do it during the Shemitah year. Don't during the Shemitah year is an imposition. The Rabbanan said, don't do it because you're going to cause huge burden on the people. So don't do it then. But it's not like they're not empowered to do it. If they're empowered to do it, do it right. The reason it's Hefker is nothing to do with Beit Din. It has to do with that's the Din of Torah. That once they make it into a leap year, there is Hefker. So it says, V'hai da, Amra da. So he says, and this is where I would bring it from, or this is my proof. Da gadish, shalo lokei tachtav, so now, if you make a pile of wheat in your field, and there's a possibility that was leket underneath it, then anything that touches the ground now becomes part of the aniyim. So you make a huge pile in your field, and there's possible pieces of leket underneath it. When you come to remove the pile, anything that's touching the ground goes to the poor people now. You don't just give them the leket, you have to give them everything that's touching the ground. Ve'amar Rabbi Ami b'shem. So Rabbi Ami says b'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. So here you have a third generation Amora now touching Rabbi Shimon Lakish, who's a first second generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. De Beit Shammai. That Mishnah is authored by Beit Shammai. Because the machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, which is when you make something hefker the aniim, is it really hefker? Or only when you make something hefker to everyone is it hefker. So Beit Hillel believes that you have to be hefker le'ashirim u'li aniyim. It has to be hefker for the rich and the poor in order for it to be hefker. Beit Shammai says, even if it's only Hefker L'Aniim, it's Hefker. So this Mishnah, he's saying, is authored by Beit Shammai, because over here, they're granting them the right to take all the grain that's on the ground. Anything that's touching the ground, they're getting. Now, can an Ashir come in and take it? No. They're granting this to the Aniim, even though it didn't all belong to the Aniim. Only the Lekki belonged to the Aniim. Yet, they're granting them everything that's there. So what do you see from here? You have Hefker, the Aniim, and they don't have to give over Trumot and Masrot on this, because it's Hefker. So here's proof of Hefker, Beit Din Hefker. They're granting this right to the Aniim. All what we just said here, in terms of this qualification of Rabbi Ami, is that Shita Beit Shammai. No, they're not denying that maybe Hefker, Beit Din Hefker, but they're just telling you that that Mishnah only works according to Beit Shammai, because there you made it Hefker, the Aniim, and not Hefker, the Ashim as well. Now, the next piece of the quote here is quoted from another Mishnah that's further on. It's not on this case here about Beit Hillel. So then we have a response. Amalei Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi responds to him, Shemanu shu patur mi masrot. We heard that he is patur mi masrot. Divrei akol mishum knas. It's everybody saying it, and it's a knas. So what's happening here is that even Beit Hillel agrees over here, and it's not only Beit Shammai. First of all, we heard that it's patur mi masrot. And it's patur mi masrot because of Hefker Beit Din Hefker, at least according to Beit Shammai, because he gave it to the Aniim. Along comes Rabbi Yossi and says, yes, we heard that it's patur mi masrot, but that's a divrei akol. That's even according to Beit Hillel, because it's a knas. They're penalizing him here. Why are they penalizing him? Because he should never have covered the grains in the first place. There was leket there. He shouldn't put his pile there. So since he put his pile there, they penalize him and they grant it to the Aniim. Well, since it's a knas, right, in that knas, they take it away from the balim, and they grant it to the aniim. So when they were doing that, they were mafkirit. They were mafkirit the gamrei, and when they're mafkirit the gamrei, this is an imposition of beit din. It's not because the original thought maybe that, oh, you have leket in there. And since you have leket in there, it's a suffix leket. So beit din says the aniim get everything. So they're mafkirit the aniim. That's not what's happening here. It's actually a knas. Even if we know there's no leket in there, we're still going to penalize you because you put it on the field when you shouldn't have. You covered over the leket when you shouldn't have. We're going to take away from you that bottom layer. And that's an issue of Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker. It's Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker. Even according to Beit Hillel, it's therefore Patur Min HaMasro, because you have full-fledged Hefker over here. That's his proof. His proof that Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker works is from this case, this Mishnah in Leket. The other possible way to read this last piece is that Beit Hillel agrees to the din of the Mishnah that the Aniim do get everything that touches the ground, but that's Mishum Knas. And Beit Hillel believes that those Aniim have to take off Maaser from it. It's actually not Patur Min HaMasrot. But what we could infer from that is, if it was Hefker Beit Din Hefker, that Beit Hillel would agree to Beit Shammai, and it would be Patur Min HaMasrot. It's only because here it's a Knas that they agree to the din, but say it's not Patur Min HaMasrot.
Okay, next Mishnah. B'chamishasar bo shuchanot ha-yoshvim b'medina. On the 15th of the month, the money changers used to sit out in the Medina, means out amongst the cities. The Kafhei, when it hit the 25th, Yeshvu b'Migdash. They moved into Yerushalayim, into the Migdash, because they were no longer collecting out in the rural areas or in the areas outside of Yerushalayim, and then they now collected inside of Yerushalayim because it was late in the season. Mishyashvu b'Migdash, once they reached the Migdash, I mean, once the money changers were in the Migdash, Tchilu Mashkein, Beit Din used to take collateral from people who hadn't paid up their chatzi shekel yet. They used to take collateral from them to force them to pay. Emim mashkinin. Who do they take collateral from? Levi'im, v'Yisraelim, v'gerim, v'avadim, mishucharim. They take it from Levi Yisrael, obviously not Kohanim, which is obvious here. Gerim, converts, and avadim, mishucharim, freed, eved, kanani. All of these are full-fledged B'nai Yisrael. Since they're full-fledged B'nai Yisrael, we take collateral from them and ensure that they pay their shekel. Avalo nashim, v'avadim uktanim. We don't do it from women, avadim eved kanani, and ktanim, and minors, because they don't have property. And they don't have property, they're not chayavin in machatzit shekel. So therefore, we do not take collateral from them. Kol katan shehitchil aviv lishkol al yado. Any katan. Now, a katan here is not defined by under 13, but a katan here is defined by under 20. Because the time period when you start giving machitza shekel has made 20 years and older. Mesrim shana lamala. So, shuvein eposek. Once you start giving, you can't stop giving. Once you've given already, it supports you to continue giving. Now, whether that means if his father passes away, that he must continue to give, or the father who gave on his behalf has to continue giving on his behalf. One of those two. To keep things at peace, they did not take a mashkon from the Kohanim to pay the machatzit shekel.
The Kohanim were known for their hot tempers, and so they didn't want to have altercations between Beit Din and the Kohanim. Now, it might relate to the later half of the Mishnah. The latter half of the Mishnah, it also discusses why the Kohanim didn't think that they had to pay the Machatzitas Yechal, which is, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, the earlier of the Tanaim, Heid Ben Bukhri Ben Yavna. Ben Bukhri is from the time of the Zugot, the very early period of the Tanaim, in Yavna. Kohen Sheshokel, Enu Chote. Any Kohen that gives voluntarily a Machatzitas Yechal is not Chote, is not a sinner. Meaning that Ben Bukhri believes that the Kohanim were Turim from the Shekel.
Why was that?
We'll see in a second why we think that. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai says, even though Ben Bukhri said that, you're not allowed to bring it, they still can give it. If they want to give it voluntarily. Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Yochanan ben Zakkai disagrees. Lo. Ki. Ela ko kohen shenu shukel, chote. A kohen who doesn't give a machatzit shekel is a chote. He must give it. He's obligated. So you have an argument of whether kohanim are chayavim in machatzit shekel or not. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says they are chayavin. The Ben Bukhri and Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai think they are patur mi chatzit shekel. Whether they can give voluntarily, that's a separate issue. Ela shel kohanim doshim mikre zil atzman. How do they make themselves patur from machatzit shekel? They derash this pasuk for their own benefit, which is chol mincha kohen kaliol tiyeh. When it comes to the Kohanim, any other mincha that is brought by Israel, a kometz goes on the Mizbeach, and the remainder of the mincha is eaten by the Kohanim. But the pasuk tells us that any mincha from a Kohen that is brought is Khalil, goes entirely on the Mizbeach. Now it might have to have a kometz taken off of it, and then the kometz and the Shirayim go on to the Mizbeach, but the whole thing goes on the Mizbeach, Khalil. What's the problem? Because it says, Chol mincha kohen Khalil tiyeh, lo teachel, you may not eat it. We have some minachot that come from the Tzibur, Hoel, Ve'omer, Ushteh lechem and lechem panim. Those are all the types of minachot that are eaten by the Kohanim. Shalanuhim. Oh, wait, if we give in to the Machatzit Shekel, then the Tzibur is purchasing these items, and we have a portion of that purchase because we're putting the money in and we're purchasing it. So then how can we eat them? How can we eat these minachot? They're partly owned by a Kohen. And anything that has to do with the Kohen is Kaleo Tiyeh, Lo Teachel, may not be eaten. Heyach Ne'achalim, and then how can we eat them? So that's the puzzle they darshaned on their own behalf. The Gemara will answer why it is that that's not true, or why we shouldn't take that into consideration. Alright, just to note here, continue with the Gemara afterwards, is that in the Yerushalmi, the Mishnah is actually split in half. There are actually two Mishnayot. This is actually made up of two Mishnayot. And that's because the Mishnayot and the Yerushalmi were added in later. The Orech, when he put them in, took the Mishnayot from the Bavli, and stuck them into the Yerushalmi. So first of all, number one is, when you look in the Yerushalmi, the Mishnah they were looking at was not necessarily the Mishnah that you find that's printed in the Gemaras here. They may not have been looking at these Mishnayot, because they looked at Mishnayot that were the Mishnayot of Yerushalmi, or Mishnayot of Eretz Yisrael. For instance, over here, in the Mishnayot of the Yerushalmi, the individual Rabbi Yehuda is quoting is Ben Kuvri and not Ben Bukhri. Ben Bukhri is based on the Mishnayot from Bavel, but the Mishnayot in Yerushalmi actually have Ben Kuvri as the individual here. What we have here are the Mishnayot of the Bavli, the Mishnayot that are printed in the Gemara Bavli. They just lifted them out and they put them into the Yerushalmi. So you have two things. One is, sometimes Yerushalmi is speaking about a Mishnah, and it's inconsistent, incongruous, because the Mishnah itself doesn't say what he says because he wasn't looking at that Mishnah. Number two is the splitting of the Mishnayot is different. Over here we have a whole Mishnah here, which in the Yerushalmi itself was split into two Mishnayot. What they ended up doing is putting the Mishnayot together and then putting the two parts of the Gemara together. So now we'll have a stream of Gemara that deals with both parts of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Eimim Ashkenim et Ketanim, that which the Mishnah says that we do not take collateral on the Ketanim, but Halit Voa Tovim, we do request that they pay the Chatzi Shekel, even though we do not obligate them to do it, we don't take collateral to force them to do it. Now the Gemara qualifies that and says, Hadad the Tamar, when do we say that we ask them to pay in their Chatzi Shekel, B'Shevish Tei Sarot? That's when they've already reached the age of puberty. But if they haven't reached the age of puberty, then we do not ask them to give in. So you actually have three stages for the Katan. The Katan, who is really a minor, that Katan we don't even ask to bring in the Chatzi Shekel. On the other hand, a Katan who's now grown up, he's reached the age of Bar Mitzvah, he's really a Gadol now. But in terms of Chatzi Shekel, it doesn't come into play until he's 20. So between the age of 13 and 20, we will ask him to pay his Chatzi Shekel, because he's already a Gadol, he's Chayav in Mitzvah, but we will not compel him to do that by taking collateral. We will just ask him to it, we'll request that he does it, we'll demand that he does it, but we won't take collateral to force him to do it. And now we have a statement in the Gemara which doesn't make so much sense, which is the Mashkenim. Mashkenim Achivit Shtei Sarot. You don't take a Mashkon until he has Shtei Sarot. Or the other way to read it is Mashkenim Mashkenim Afu Pishevit Bet Sarot. And we don't take collateral even if he has Bet Sarot. But either way, this part of the Gemara seems unnecessary and the Girsa is problematic. Because, of course, our Mishnah already said we don't take a mashkon from him, and that's the whole premise of the Gemara here. Or, number two, if you say that he take a mashkon once he's reached the age of puberty, then how do we reconcile that with that Gemara? So you see here the Gemara changes the gear, so it says, mashkonim achei ben esrim. You don't take a mashkon from him until he's 20, which would accord with our Mishnah, and would be the same as our Mishnah, no chiddush, but it's the same as our Mishnah. Others read it that, ulmashkenim mashkenim, Achivi Betzarot references the father who's given a shekel on behalf of his child. Not the katan himself, but the father giving on behalf of his child. There, we only take a mashkon for the father once the child is over the age of bar mitzvah. After the child's over the age of bar mitzvah, then we'll start taking a mashkon from the father to continue paying on behalf of the child. But until the age of bar mitzvah, we won't force him to do that. So that's another way to read it. Once you do that, then the Lashon over here makes sense because it's not referencing the case we said before, but rather this other case is a case where it's the father giving on half of the child, where the first case we spoke about before was the child giving on his own. Kaini, it's a new sugya, a new subject, which is Kainhu, Matnita. This is what we have in a Braita. Aim a mashkinim at the goanim, bipnei derech kakavod. We don't take a mashkon for the goanim because of kavod, because it's beneath their dignity for us to take a mashkon from them. Now what the Gemara here is doing is not saying that they had a different girsa in the Mishnah, but rather they're saying, what is mipnei darche shalom here? Darche shalom is a term that's used in the Gemara in Gittin, and it's used in that context differently than it's used over here. And the Gemara is saying the Darchei Shalom that we're talking about over here is not the Darchei Shalom of Gittin, but rather the Darchei Shalom over here is the Derech Kavod. That it's not proper to take a mashkon from the Kohanim beneath their dignity. It's something that would be denigrating to them, and therefore we do not take a mashkon from the Kohanim. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Heid. Now we have the discussion in the Mishnah, which revolves around whether Kohanim are Chayavim in Machatzit HaShekel or not. So Amar Rabbi Brechia, Taima de Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What's the reason behind Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's position? Because it says, Ze Yitnu. In the Parsha of the Pikudim, in the Machatzit HaShekel, it says, Ze Yitnu kol overa Pikudim, Machatzit HaShekel b'Shekel HaKodesh, Esrim Geira HaShekel, Machatzit HaShekel Trumat HaShem. So Ze Yitnu, you'd bet Shvatim. Ze in Gematria is 12. So Ze Yitnu, all 12 of the Shvatim must give. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's position is, that Levi is not, Sheir Levi is not Patur from the Chatzit Shekel, and the Kohanim, as a subset of Levi, are Chayavim in the Shekel. There's nobody who gets an exemption for the Machatzit HaShekel. Based on Rabbi Yochanan's answer here that includes the whole Shevet Levi, you could infer something about Ben Bukhi's position. Menachot and Arachin, Rashi and Tosafot over there say according to Ben Bukhi's position or Ben Kuvri's position, the Levi'im are also Pturim Mimachatzit HaShekel and not just the Kohanim. On the other hand, Ramban al Torah believes that they only argued about the Kohanim, but as far as the Levi'im concerned, even Ben Bukhi agrees that the Levi'im are Chayavim in Machatzit HaShekel. Rab Tevi b'shem Rav Amnuna. So now we have Rabbi Tevi as a third generation Amora in the name of Rav Amnuna, second generation Amora, in Bavel. Kein mishivim chachamim leRabbi Yehuda. This is how the chachamim respond to Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah.
Now based on this, many people infer from here that Rabbi Yehuda is actually involved in the Machloket over here. Because why are the Chachamim responding to Rabbi Yehuda? They should be responding to Ben Bukhri. The fact that they're responding to Rabbi Yehuda suggests that Rabbi Yehuda is involved in the Machloket. Therefore, they read the Mishnah as if Rabbi Yehuda is telling over all the information. Rabbi Yehuda tells over the position of Ben Bukhri, as well as the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's retelling the whole story. And then the drasha of the Kohanim at the end is Rabbi Yehuda saying about himself. So it actually turned out that there's a three-way machloket in the Mishnah. We have Ben Bukhri's position, which is that the Kohanim are Turim from Machatzit HaShekel, but if they give it voluntarily, that's okay. Well, the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is Kohanim are Chayavim in Machatzit HaShekel, and they're Chotef, they don't give it. And then we have the position of the Kohanim, which Rabbi Yehuda actually brings down and subscribes to as well, which is that the Kohanim may not give the Machatzit HaShekel. It's actually problematic for them to give the Machatzit HaShekel. And it'll turn out there's actually a three-way machloket here because of the fact that Rabbi Yehuda is found in the description of the Gemara here of the Yerushalmi as being a Baal Plukto of the Rabbanan.
Kein mishivim chachamim leRabbi Yehuda. Chatat ha-yachid meita. When it comes to a chatat that belongs to an individual, if meita balim, then the chatat goes lemita.
Ein chatat tzibur meita. On the other hand, when you're talking about a public chatat, a chatat that belongs to the tzibur as a whole, then if something goes wrong or something changes, it doesn't go to mita. So you see from here that there's a difference between private ownership and public ownership. Same thing over here. In our case, minchata yachid greva kalil. You're right, a kohen who brings a personal or private mincha, that goes entirely on the mizbeach. But ein minchata tzibur greva kalil, but that's not true of the mincha of the tzibur. The mincha of the tzibur doesn't have that din that has to go kalil. And that's why you're wrong. Gemara says, v'kasha, mishivim ladavar she'enu modebo? How can you challenge Rabbi Yehuda from that statement? You made an equation here. You said, chatat by yachid is different than a chatat by tzibur. So over here, the mincha of the yachid is different than the mincha of the tzibur. But that assumes that there is such a distinction between the chatat yachid and the chatat tzibur. Of course there is a difference, but not according to Rabbi Yehuda. And that's what the Gemara says here. How can you ask on Rabbi Yehuda from a statement that he doesn't agree with? Which is, now again, our Gemara here has the word ditznan in it, but that's again a later addition using a Bavli word to say you ditznan that we have a Mishnah. The way the Rishami works is it goes straight in, which is, she'ein chatat tzibur meita. We have a principle, is that the chatat tzibur never gets put to death. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, tamut. He can be put to death. So Rabbi Yehuda, there is no distinction between chatat of a yachid and the chatat of a tzibur. They both are go to mita. So therefore, your question is not a good question because the parallel doesn't work for Rabbi Yehuda. V'hu motiv lon. And Rabbi Yehuda asks on the position of the Chachamim, v'zu lo nidvat yachidi. You're telling me that when the Kohanim give in, isn't it a personal donation? They're not obligated to give it. And now when they give in to the Machatzi the Shekel, they're doing it on a voluntary basis. Doesn't that become like a minchat yid? They have a personal donation there. It's not a donation that belongs to the Lishka. It was given on a personal donation basis. V'inun mitvin and lay. And then the Chachamim respond to Rabbi Yehuda and say, Mikevan shenimsara letzibur, kemi shehu nidvat zibur. Once they give it into the Lishka, even though it was a private donation, because they were not obligated in it, despite the fact once you've given it, it becomes part of the coffers of the tzibur, and you no longer have any private ownership over it. And so therefore it now is transformed into nidvat tzibur, something that the korban bought on behalf of the tzibur. Tiv, the pasuk says, Zeitnu, kolo aver ala pikudim, Rabbi Yehuda, which is Rabbi Yehuda, v'renem Nechemia. And Rabbi Nechemia, chadamar, kol da'avar biyama yitain. It says, kol ha'over ala pikudim. What does it mean, over? That passes by. So when you enumerate and you do a census, people pass in front of you so you can count them. The Gemara wants to know what this kol ha'over means. So one of them thinks that kol ha'over means that they pass through the Yam Suf. So anybody went through the Yam Suf, he ten gives. V'charana amar, charana means the other one says, kol da'avar al pikudaya. Pikudaya should be with a hey here. Whoever violated my commandments, itain, he should give. Now, over here means that they violated the commandment of Avodah Zarah, and they worship the ego. So anybody who has the chait ha'ego on their hands, avar apikudaya, itain, he should give. Madamar, kol davar biyama itain, the one who says that, anybody who went through the amsuf gives, misayeh, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That helps Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's position, because that includes the Kohanim. The Kohanim went through the amsuf as well. Madamar, kol davar apikudaya, the one who says, anybody who violated the will of God and worshipped Avodah Zarah, itain, he should give Messiah to Ben Bukhri. That helps for Ben Bukhri's position, because Shevet Levi was not part of the worshipping of the ego. And since they weren't part of worshipping the ego, they're not obligated in bringing Machatzit to Shekel, which accords with that position of Ben Bukhri, that the Kohanim are not Chayavim in Chatzi Shekel. That's the Machloket here. Are Kohanim obligated or not obligated in Machatzita Shekel? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says yes. Ben Bukhri says no. And then Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai adds on top of that, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Ben Bukhri. He just adds on the fact that not only are they not Chayav, but they're also not able to give. They want to give the Chatzi Shekel, they cannot do that. All right, next Mishnah. We're going to read the first half of the Mishnah today. And then we'll read the second half of the Mishnah tomorrow. First half of the Mishnah is, nashim vavadim uktanim. Even though we said above, you don't take a lateral from women, Evid Kanani and Ktanim. Valim shaklu mikablim yadan. If they give a shekel voluntarily, we accept it from them. So that's true of an Isha, an Evid, and a Katan. So they can all give on a voluntary basis. Hanachri hakuti shaklu ein mikablim mehen. If an Achri or a Kuti gives voluntarily of a chatzi shekel, we don't accept it from them. We don't accept from them birds that are brought in behalf of a Zav or a Zavah or a yoledet, v'chataot, v'shamot. We don't accept any of these karbanot from a non-Jew. Zeklal, this is the principle. Goshini darvini dev. Anything can be brought on a voluntary basis. Mekablim, biyadan. We accept them. Goshenu ni darvini dev. Something that cannot be brought on a voluntary basis. Ein mekablim biyadan. We don't accept it from them. So, the karbanot that are listed here, the kinei zav, the kinei zavot, the kinei yoledet, v'chataot, v'shamot, are all obligatory offerings. Ein mekablim biyadan. We don't accept it. Chem ufrash ayadei Ezra. And we have a similar concept in time as Rashi Emor. Lo lachem v'lanu livnot bayit lelukeinu.
The Kutim
wanted to come and help with the building of the Beit Mikdash. And Ezra turns them down and says, Lo lachem v'lanu livnot bayit lelukeinu. You don't have the right to join with us in building the house for God. It's only our project. We're not going to bring in outsiders.
And even though the pasuk is only about the kutim, it has more general application, which is that avodat Hashem and the maaseh ha-karbanot, the building of the mikdash, is uniquely the obligation of Klal Yisrael, and outsiders cannot participate, not in the building of the mikdash, and not in the service in the mikdash.
All right, we'll continue with the next half of the Mishnah in tomorrow's daf. We'll stop over here.